Well, good evening, Emmaus Way. Here in the new year, as I've been reminded on Epiphany, which, yeah, does not always come on Sunday, as I was also reminded. You know, all these things. I'm still learning what liturgy is and what it works. You know, yeah, every once in a while, Molly tells me something I didn't know. So, but we're here celebrating Epiphany in a really specific way as this first Sunday of 2019. And as we talked about darkness all through Advent and bearing witness in the midst of it, we're talking about light tonight in a lot of ways. And we have this from Jan Richardson to get us started. How the stars get in your bones. Sapphire, diamond, emerald, quartz, think of every hard thing that carries its own brilliance, shining with the luster that comes only from uncountable ages in the earth, in the dark, buried beneath the unimaginable weight, bearing what seemed impossible, bearing it still. And you, shouldering the grief you had thought so solid, so impermeable, the terrible anguish you carried as a burden, now become, who can say what day it happened, a beginning. See how the sorrow in you slowly makes its own light, how it conjures its own fire. See how the radiant, even your despair has become in the grace of that sun. Did you think this would happen by holding the weight of the world, by giving into the press of sadness and time? I tell you, this blazing in you, it does not come by choosing the most difficult way, the most daunting. It does not come by the sheer force of your will. It comes from the helpless place in you that despite all cannot help but hope, the part of you that does not know how not to keep turning toward this world, to keep turning your face toward the sky, to keep turning your heart toward this unendurable earth, knowing your heart will break, but turning it still. I tell you, this is how the stars get in your bones. This is how the brightness makes a home in you, as you open to the hope that burnishes every fractured thing it finds and sets it shimmering, a generous light that will not cease, no matter how deep the darkness grows, no matter how long the night becomes. Still, 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 the secret of secrets keeps turning in you, becoming beautiful, becoming blessed, kindling the luminous way by which you will emerge, carrying your shattered heart like a constellation within you, singing to the day that will not fail to come. Amen. So, with light in mind, Frody, this is your doing. This was not my doing, but we have a new community song for Epiphany, This Little Light of Mine. The kids already know it. Many of you already know it. It's done round upon round upon round, from movement song to kids song to all people song. So here we go.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
You're doing so good already. Thank you, everybody. I think the kids are headed upstairs. What's going on with Epiphany and the kids, Rhody?
Epiphany things today. Yeah. kids are having Epiphany party. Little kids are learning about lots of other histories and traditions of Epiphany. But I think first we're going to go outside while it's still sunny out, since it's like 60 degrees.
Because there's a light out there.
We're gonna, yeah.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, go do it, kids. Well, as the kids go, as we did during Advent, and I think we hope to keep doing in some form, we want to have a community question. You've got like a little question there that we're going to ask in just a second. I say this to let you know what's going to happen, and so you can think about what you might say. But also, we want to make some announcements about the new year and things that are going on. I know one is we're going to continue doing Music in the Basement in the new year, and that will be, I think, 2 weeks from tomorrow in this space. And it happens on MLK Monday, and we're actually just going to lean into that and do an MLK program. I think we're working on some spoken word poets alongside Ernest and the band doing some movement song, civil rights song type stuff. That's 7 to 9, 2 weeks from today, MLK Monday, or tomorrow. All right. So Epiphany is more than just a light bulb moment. It's more than an aha moment. An epiphany is something that is revealed to you, something where the light shines and makes something clear and manifest. Here in this Christian calendar, season of Epiphany, the festival of the revelation of Jesus, and the text throughout the season will help us understand Jesus' identity as God incarnate. I think we're going to be spending a lot of time in gospel texts with Jesus. And beginning with the revelation of the great star that the Magi followed. But before we get to that, we want to ask this question. As I said, we talked about darkness all throughout Advent, and so we want to sit in the light this Epiphany season today and going forward. And in this year of bearing witness and reclaiming kinship, we're going to turn a bit more towards the kinship and hold that witness piece in our minds as we do that. And so we're asking, where has kinship been revealed to you as a life-giving light in this past week? Would love for a couple of people to speak into that and sort of, begin to frame our Epiphany conversation.
We were supposed to go to a national park, kind of change our plans. We went to the Asheville area over the break, and I was able to connect with a cousin. I know when we say kinship, we mean more than family, but a cousin that I just haven't seen much, and kind of have like, just sort of forget that we're on each other's radar, that we could be. And it was such a joy to be with her and her boyfriend and see their new house and see their awesome Saint Berdoodle. an amazing creation. I recommend it to everyone. He's so sweet. So it just brought me a lot of joy just to reconnect. We had a really fun dinner with them and just kind of be brought back into kind of the same space.
Sometimes kinship surprises you in the midst of family, right? Yeah. I can vouch for that.
So we're receiving meals right now, the folding of aging thing, and I know it's not very exciting to bring meals or to make time to cook extra, but we've been really benefiting from that. We will continue to benefit from that over the next several weeks. And earlier this week I had a really fun postpartum medical emergency. I had to go to the hospital with like no notice, and we were able to just call neighbors, and they immediately took Judy for the next 12 hours. And it would, it was like another time where it wasn't fun stuff. It doesn't like feel like happy all the time. To be in community is not like exciting necessarily, but really meaningful when you just call someone up and take your child. There's no questions asked. Yeah. So we are on the receiving end of lots of goodness right now. I'm feeling very thankful for it.
Thanks, Marie. I'm glad you and little one are well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
Yeah.
We have these friends who we traditionally spend time with on New Year's Day every year. And this year, because of various circumstances, our crew was in a really bad spot. I just texted and said, I don't think we should do it this year. You know, this, and this are happening. And our friends just said, come to our house. We want you to come, even though all of this stuff is going on. They did 7/8 of the work for the food and everything, and just said, we want you to come anyway, even though you're in bad place. And that was really a gift of kinship. Even when I wasn't sure, I still wanted to come. It felt like true kinship that they wanted us.
I'll share one. I got tapped, not totally out of the blue, but like I was pushing for something and then someone said, okay, you're going to do that thing, which was to hold like a community circle in our neighborhood on the back of a bunch of like pretty classic sort of like neighborhood listserv type conversation after some shots got fired in our neighborhood. And so we did that and about 40 people showed up and I ended up facilitating it, and I was so scared of where this conversation could go. And it turned about as well as something like that can turn out. And I think a lot of people came away, yeah, feeling like they wanted to do more conversation like that, which was saying a lot. And so the amount of leaning in and letting go that diverse group of people had to do such that someone didn't come away feeling like violated was actually, yeah, it was extremely unlikely. And yeah, was way beyond anything that I was able to contribute. So I was surprised by my neighborhood's ability to sit in kinship for an hour this week.
We spent 5 days with my family in Colorado, and like any family, there's, you know, difficult things, but overall, I think it was a blessing, and I think, like your neighborhood, we were able to be in kinship for that time and support each other and encourage each other. I was grateful for that.
Anyone else? Kinship. Well, if you didn't get it done in the question, you can get it done in the passing of the peace. Go find some kinship with each other. You should pass the peace of Christ to each other. I think, again, you're reminded about the coffee pot. We've got some water back there. Maybe next week we'll have clean coffee pots. You know, we've deemed them so bad that someone needs to clean them before we can use them again. Just, you know, keep that in mind. And, you know, yeah, okay. But yeah, please pass the peace of Christ to each other, and yeah, we'll be back for, yeah, an Epiphany dialogue in just a second.
I know. All right. Welcome, yeah, to Epiphany at Emmaus Way, a non-music Sunday Epiphany. But we are first going to listen to a song. Yeah, so I'm curious, we're about to press play, but if anyone has heard this simple yet haunting tune before, I mean, these are the lyrics. Why don't you go down, old Hannah? Hannah, don't you rise no more, don't you rise. But if you rise in the morning, oh, if you rise in the morning, won't you set the world on fire? Hannah was the name workers on Texas prison farms gave the son. This song was wildly popular on prison farms throughout the South, And according to Bruce Jackson in his book, Wake Up Dead Man, there are at least 10 different recordings of, and 10 different versions of this song that have been recorded. And it's been recorded by folk music performances and people like Leadbelly, Lightning Hopkins, and Pete Seeger. I first heard the song in the version that we were going to play, but you can Google, 6 years ago at a house show from Midwest musician Chris Farrow. And it seemed to me then, and it seems to me now, like the perfect epiphany song. For you see, just like the regular rhythms of the sun, epiphany is a regular rhythm in the church year, when we patiently watch and listen as God is revealed before us once again. It is the time when the church gathers to reflect on the mighty works of God as revealed in the birth of Jesus Christ and illuminated by a star for the wise ones from the east to follow. Epiphany gives us the time and the resources to watch, wait, listen, look, and anticipate the life, the light, the hope of Jesus' presence. It's a beautifully enlightening, all-encompassing season of illuminating love that is this Sunday and last until Lent. And yet, given the overwhelming evil still permeating our world, many of us, or perhaps just me sometimes, wish that the star wouldn't rise. For when the star rises, I often think it offers a false sense of possibility. Maybe it would just be easier if Epiphany wouldn't come. The light would ease. The light would cease because the world has not yet been set on fire. We're sitting in a world where there hasn't been a complete canticle of the turning. The kingdom of God seems more like a faraway reality than a potential actuality. Many of us yearn, like those prisoners on a Texas farm, that if Hannah would rise again, why wouldn't she set the world on fire this time? That if Epiphany would come again, why can't Epiphany and God rise in such a way that families were no longer separated by inhumane borders? Why couldn't Epiphany come in such a way and God set the world on fire that 7-year-old girls are not killed for the color of their skin? If Epiphany were to come, if Hannah continues to rise, why would women lose access to help after being victims of domestic violence simply because politicians can't agree? If Epiphany would come, why couldn't there stop being gun violence and 3 people in Durham still be alive in 2019? But each year, whether we like it or not, Hannah rises. Epiphany comes, and we hear, in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." More than likely, these men were astrologers, these wise ones from the east. They might have belonged to the priestly caste of Zoroastrianism, which paid particular attention to the stars. They were reputable for being scientists, for being astrologists. They practiced other religions. They were not Jewish people, and yet they saw a star rise. They saw old Hannah's rising, a rising that might have been a supernova, a comet, might have been Jupiter and Saturn, that came together in 7 BCE. But regardless, old Hannah, Rose, the wise ones saw, and they began to follow. And this light was and is a threat to the most powerful man of the time, Herod, because the light that the wise men followed is the light at the heart of all life. Not just of some life, not just of certain people, and the principalities and powers always feel threatened by the shining of the power of love as seen through divine light. The wise men, unlike me, had faith that somehow this star mattered. And I wonder, as they began to follow, not knowing where it may lead, if they started singing, "Why don't you go down, old Hannah? Hannah, don't you rise no more, don't you rise. But if you rise in the morning, oh, if you rise. If you rise in the morning, please set the world on fire." In this scene of First Epiphany, God's way of setting the world on fire is through radical kinship. Connecting wise ones of a different faith and social location to a poor babe that was born in a manger. Bringing vastly different worlds together through divine light. Old Hannah rising and the Magi following expands our understanding of both the ways of God, that God reaches out to people to announce good news, and what it means to be a people captivated by the gospel. These men did not come looking for the Christ child through ways that we might expect, like a good dialogue, liturgy, an open table, or a radically welcoming congregation. They came seeking the Christ child after studying the night skies, about as far away from Jesus as they could be. The divine light shows us God's own work of embracing all people that is sometimes more mystery than practice, because God's way of radical kinship and union are always bigger than our understandings. Father Gregory Boyle, who we've mentioned a lot since August, tells a story of radical, unlikely kinship between himself and a gang member. So Louis is a 19-year-old gang member and made money, as Boyle says, hand over fist by running up to cars and selling crack cocaine. But then Louis realized he liked what he was selling and quickly became his own best customer. And so after Boyle's many attempts over many years to get Louis into rehab, Louis finally went. And Boyle tells this story of going to visit Louis in rehab, and immediately Louis comes to him and says, "I had a dream last night, gee, I had a dream, and you were in it. In the dream, the two of us are in a darkened room, no light whatsoever, no illuminated exit signs, no light creeping from under the door, total darkness. We weren't speaking, but I knew that you were there. And then you silently pulled this flashlight from your pocket." And Louis goes on to say, "I knew with that flashlight that only I could turn it on." And he said, "But I was so thankful you had the flashlight to begin with." Then Louis talks about how, with great trepidation, he starts slowly walking toward this flashlight that is not on. And he realizes he could flip the switch. And then the room is flooded with light. As Louis is telling the story, he begins sobbing uncontrollably and says, "And the light, gee, the light is better than the dark," as though he had not known that that were the case before. Boyle goes on to say, "We cannot turn the light switch on for anyone, but we all own flashlights. With any luck, on any given day, we know where to aim them for each other. We do not rescue anyone at the margins, but go figure. If we stand at the margins with our flashlights, we are all rescued. Make no mistake about it." This epiphany text and Boyle's narrative remind me of a rabbi's take on the burning bush in the Hebrew scriptures, in which Moses, right, sees a bush on fire, but the bush is not consumed. And the rabbi says that the important thing about the story is not that the bush is burning, but that Moses notices. The rabbi goes on to say, because every bush is burning. Every bush is on fire with presence and light. Everything in the universe shines because God is at the heart of it. If only we would take notice. So it is in our Epiphany story. I think this story is one that invites us to not let our frustrations and desperation rule the day, to not let our despair have the final word, but to be willing to open our eyes to old Hannah rising, to the divine light, to a new way of kinship that the divine light sparks and begins that is everywhere. Just like the wise ones from the east followed the star to find Emmanuel, trying to make sense of this rising, and if Boyle's assertions might actually be reality because of this Christ Jesus, if the world might finally be set on fire, if we too seek Emmanuel, God with us, hoping, even if the hope feels foreign, that God might still use signs and symbols and even stars to guide us closer to one another and to divine presence, then maybe we all can begin turning toward illuminating love and radical kinship. For it is the divine presence of Epiphany, I think, that opens us to see the flashlights already in our hands, the burning bushes of liberation around us, the canticle of the turning at hand that is, in fact, at hand. Sometimes it maybe just doesn't look like the ways we think it should. The likely and unlikely kinship we're always invited to be a part of, if we would but look up and see the star. In some Christian faith traditions, y'all might be wondering, as Ben said, why there are such fancy tables around the outside of the room. But in some Christian faith traditions, which I found out last night, Jamie Kite grew up doing this. I had no idea. I've never done this before. Each Epiphany, folks are given a star word as sign, as symbol, and an invitation to be captivated and respond to the divine light as the wise ones did. The thought is, if God then spoke through a star and began a new way of being in kinship through divine light and love, and if God is still speaking, then maybe God still speaks through stars. So tonight, we're going to do something similar. So, it's called Star Words. I realize it sounds probably really cheesy to a lot of you. It did to me. I've known about this tradition for a very long time, and I haven't done it because I've thrown a lot of shade at it. But then I realized I was being convicted by the words that I was writing. So I was like, okay, we're going to do this. So we're going to open ourselves to Star Words. So on the tables, you will see there are a lot of stars. There are silver stars, which do not have words on them, but there are white stars that do. And there are also stars in this nook if you want a bit quieter of a space. And you have two options. You can, what a lot of traditions do, you do not have to do this, but it's an option, you can randomly select a star, not really look, just kind of go and pick up one, and that is your star word for this Epiphany season. Or, if you want, you can read through, there are about 80 of them, but you can read through them and select a word that feels and seems fitting for you. You can take more than one star word if you want. The hope is that these words, in some way, might open us to the divine light as an invitation to more intentional, radical kinship this Epiphany. Hope is that these star words are a new way, a different way, a different angle to think about old Hannah rising and what it might mean to come alongside God to help set the world on fire. These star words are a compelling reminder that we, like the wise ones, can also respond to the star if we but stop and pay attention. And if maybe we check our skepticism, there's no way God could really work through a star, and believe that maybe God still can. In the words of Jan Richardson, "I tell you, this blazing in you, it does not come by choosing the most difficult way, the most daunting. It does not come by the sheer force of your will. It comes from the helpless place in you that, despite all, cannot help but hope. The part of you that does not know how not to keep turning toward this world, to keep turning your face toward the sky, to keep turning your heart toward this unendurable earth, knowing your heart will break, but turning it still. I tell you, this is how the stars get in your bones. This is how the brightness makes a home in you as you open to the hope that burnishes every fractured thing it finds and sets it shimmering, a generous light that will not cease. No matter how deep the darkness grows, no matter how long the night becomes, still, still, still. The secret of secrets keeps turning in you, becoming beautiful, becoming blessed, kindling the luminous way by which you will emerge, carrying your shattered heart like a constellation within you, singing to the day that will not fail to come." So go to a table. We have some time. Pick a word, pick a star. And I would like you all to just be open and spend some time with this word or words. Reflect on the word. If you want to have a more contemplative space and light candles over your star word or what this might mean for you or how you might be more open to the star word, you can go into our contemplative nook. We have candles and star words in there. You may want to write a reflection about the word. You might want to write why you hate this activity and think this is the dumbest thing that Molly ever came up with. It's fine. But just be open to the process. Whatever you are feeling within your being and within this word, reflect on it. Pray if you would like. You can write what you're thinking about the star word over there if you would like. Stars are on every table. There are writing utensils on every table. There are blank note cards if you want to really start writing. The stars are kind of small, so you might need more space. But yeah, go pick a star word. Reflect, think, talk to one another about it if you would like. And then we're going to come back, in probably 12 minutes or so. See, I'm so precise. You have time. Go get a star word. Let's lean in. Let's try this practice. All right. If you would, start making your way back to the middle with your star word. And I want to hear from you. So what is striking to you about your start word? What's challenging? What's hope-filled? Yeah, kind of what is your star word sparking up within you? Or maybe you just want to share and read out loud your star word.
It feels like Jesus
can't believe it. Okay, Erin wants me to read hers. She picked out the word, the star memory. So her memories of her family are very, very important to her. So you want to say anything about your family?
It was our family up in heaven has passed.
Thanks so much, Erin.
Relatives that have passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. That's beautiful. And how memory, right? And memories of family, I think, reminding us of love and light and hope. Yeah. Thanks for that, Erin. Others, what's striking to you about your star word? Challenging, hope-filled?
My star word is wonder. And I think it speaks of lots of possibilities and amazement. When you experience wonder, it's like all of a sudden something new is opened up to you that you didn't expect. And you're amazed and awed by it.
Thanks, Gail. I really, Gregory Boyle in his book says that we've become a society of judgment, but as people of God, we are called to be people of awe. And that's really struck me in how wonder and awe, that awe, our posture toward the kingdom, and just, yeah, toward the world should be awe rather. Anyway, but thanks for that. Or how might your star word, do you think, empower you to think about kinship and a radical way of being in kinship and following and drawing near to divine light and presence? How might it help you do that? Push you toward being open to mercy, justice, love, and kinship alongside God, this epiphany?
My word was understanding. And I read that at first to be like, kind of like walking in somebody else's shoes, kind of understanding. I guess it's like a charge to just be more open and mindful of others' perspectives and histories and all of that kind of thing.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah. It's not always easy to have understanding, is it? But no, important. Yeah, really important. Any others?
So, friend Misha randomly selected our words.
Good job, Misha.
Yeah. And my word that he chose for me was courage. Mm-hmm. And so, framing it through the light, through the lens of kinship, being an introvert, it's not easy to step into social situations or situations, period. But I've often found that I rarely regret when I do. So maybe this year might look like more courageous stepping into kinship.
Thanks for that. Yeah, more courageously stepping into situations and places where perhaps we would hesitate, right? But not to let that hesitation stop us. Any other thoughts on your word? On this notion even that God still is speaking through stars and could be speaking to us?
Molly, my word was, I randomly chose a word was redemption, which the first thing that brought to mind was the Over the Rhine song we played, heard you read a few times. So. The first two lines of this are, Lord, we need a new redemption song, Lord, we've tried and it just seems to come out wrong. Which, there's this kind of sadness to that, like there are so many broken things, but there are things that we can't fix alone. But then also that something that's broken, like something that needs redeemed, is something that has inherent value that was once or is still good, and that goodness just has to be found again. So, yeah, that's a communal process.
Sure. Thanks, Caleb. And I think, right, like I think something about radical kinship too, and how this fits in is, I think we often feel, right, like we can't, because there is so much brokenness, it's like we can't start until all the brokenness is fixed, right, or is like made whole. But what if kinship and leaning into divine presence and light and claiming redemption is saying, no, no, redemption, like communally, we will together redeem the broken, right? And our the broken parts of ourselves and alongside God. But yeah, that it doesn't have to all be perfect. But we can lean into the brokenness. Thanks. Any other final thoughts on your star word?
I have the word energy, which actually really resonated with me.
Yeah.
I was sort of surprised as I to find a word that resonated. And something that means to me right now is making room for God's energy to like come through the practice of centering prayer, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like emptying and allowing. But just I'm feeling a lot of excitement or hope in just the practice that I don't have to be leading or initiating, but just allowing God to fill me might be part of redemption.
Yeah. Thanks for that, SK. Thanks for participating in this activity, this practice. I was really nervous to do it. Yeah. But I'm glad that we did. So thank you for leaning in. And I hope that you all will take your star words with you and just reflect on them this Epiphany season and how they might shape and inform how you think about kinship and drawing near to the divine presence. The story of the wise ones does not tell us that the road will always be easy. For if you remember, they had to leave by another way. But the story of the wise ones who followed a star does tell us that the love, mystery, and kinship of God will be present with us on our journey, inviting us to draw near in all of our brokenness and in all the world's brokenness. For if persons from the East can respond and follow a star of a foreign God to be about the inbreaking of a new radical kinship and possibility for an inclusive, expansive, loving world, then surely we who are captivated by the gospel can do the same and can take these words and reflect on them and remember that old Hannah is rising, whether we like it or not, and how might we respond to come alongside God and help set the world on fire. Elizabeth is going to lead us in confession and absolution.
Hear our confession for tonight, House of Light by Mary Oliver. Still, what I want in my life is to be willing to be dazzled, to cast aside the weight of facts, and maybe even to float a little above this difficult world. I want to believe I'm looking into the white fire of a great mystery. I want to believe that the imperfections are nothing, that the light is everything, that it is more than the sum of each flawed blossom rising and falling. And I do. And here our absolution. An excerpt from Tattoos on the Heart by Gregory Boyle. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world." I like even more what Jesus doesn't say. He does not say, One day, if you're more perfect and try really hard, you'll be light. He doesn't say, if you play by the rules, cross your T's and dot your I's, then maybe you'll become light. No, he says straight out, you are light. It is the truth of who you are, waiting only for you to discover it. So, for God's sake, don't move. No need to contort yourself to be anything other than who you are.
So we came to the table, all Advent, in darkness. We thought about where light might meet us in that, what role we might be playing or being asked to play in bringing light amidst darkness, where we might look to find it. And here we are talking about light and being the light. Yeah, and I think it's been framed really well to direct us toward the practice of this table. As Jane Richardson tells us, the light that we're thinking about in us does not come by our choosing, doesn't come by a sheer force of will. It comes from a helpless, permeable, needy, contingent place in you that will not be okay on its own, but that in spite of itself doesn't know how to keep turning toward the world, to keep turning our heart toward this unendurable earth and our life on it with each other. Those are all things that are very familiar to us. I don't know that the table's asking us to do any choosing. It's not asking us for a sheer force of will. The idea that we would come to and need a table like this is an admission of our very own helplessness. And so if we're thinking about coming in light tonight, as opposed to coming to turn on the light or grow the light in us, are we doing anything other than just uniting the lights that are already in us, as we do week after week, believing that surely if there is a God with us, then that God must be between us? And surely if I am the light, if you are the light of the world, then putting two lights together will make the light brighter. This is the thing we do every week. This is how epiphanies happen. In the weird kinship that comes from accepting our neediness, accepting what we cannot escape, accepting the needs that we have that draw us to each other, and meeting at a table like this one with a God who has condescended to us and said, I am with you, and I am in you, and when you come together, the kinship you find may surprise you and may surprise the world and may surprise all of us with what it creates. So that's the table I invite you to tonight at this epiphany. Is a table filled with the light of the world and the light of the world that we bring to it and each other. And that's the table I invite you to tonight. Come seeking the light. Go out with your star word in your mind with the assurance that you are a light in and of the world, and you do not bear that light alone. Welcome to the table.